It is feature time. And so let us bring up a big applause for Stopping and Screaming.
How are you?
Yeah,
good.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that. Very happy to be here. This is my favorite show on the entire North Side.
All right.
It's just great poetry.
Somehow tolerate other shows. I guess I'm still young, so I can still tolerate it.
You are young.
But it does have the scariest microphone stand on the planet. My parents are here.
Your mom's here.
Yeah. From them, my freedom from them, my hairline from them. And I was thinking about Jen today, so I'll do that poem for you, because I was trying to memorize this poem without thinking about Jen. I have been thinking about her. I have been thinking about her the way fever thinks about perspiration, the way a raindrop thinks about racing down a windshield. I have been thinking about her. The way the moon thinks about fascination, or a crystal thinks about meditation, or the soul thinks about the imagination as a tool for creation, turning condemnation to procreation and relaxation out of procrastination. I have been thinking about her. And I see 10 hummingbirds every day. And when I think about her, I remember that auspice is an omen of birds. And that auspicious is a word that means with a promise of success. And I think about this when I think about her, and I wonder what cloud she fell off of.
Aww.
And landed like a passionate snowflake on the tip of my tongue. Always she's on the tip of my tongue as we melt into one drop of sweat from her arched back to my wet palm. The weight of temples in Tibet brought down by an unconditional love as of yet unrecorded in my thoughts, except when I let my mind think of her. And I'm telling you, I have been thinking about her. And it's like I must have blinked. The fascinating moon winked at me, and there's a kink in the fabric of space. The curve of her face catching light like a snowflake placed on the tip of my tongue. Always she is on the tip of my tongue, and I think I have come so far in this life. I mean, I took the horseshoe that hung above my bed down so that luck wouldn't hit me in the head on the way down while I dreamed. And it seemed that she sung some song, and my heart stung mine, and strung some rhymes like beads around my neck, sinking this wet palm into her arched back like a shape to fill a lack that cracks the code that stacks the odds against ever finding the fast track to unshackled love in her actions, refracting awkward beginnings with perfect conversational feedback. I have been thinking about her. And it's like I've been watching the sun undress with crystal combs, her curled hair in my restless hands. I've been thinking about her, and damn! At least my heart parts when I remember her back arch and that drop of sweat that lands on the tip of my tongue, always on the tip of my tongue, as if I could drink it. As if I could ever satiate my thirst or resonate with the simplicity of bubbles bursting. She is my first and last thought every day, and she is the current of love that has brought my heart to maximum validation. I declare in this room right now a romanticification proclamation. I'm creating a nation where every love is free, and if only every head in this room could see inside my mind, you would see that I have been thinking about her the way Einstein thinks about relativity, the way Newton thinks about gravity, the way King thinks about unity. I've been thinking about her the way Wayne Allen Jones thinks about publishing poetry, the way we all think about Charlie. Where's Charlie? I've been thinking about her the way Haley imagines the infinity of a comet's curve. I've been thinking about her the way Icarus thinks about the sun. And when I think about this woman, I think I could love one woman for the rest of my life. Woo-hoo!
serious.
You just messed up all the women in the audience.
I heard her laugh like you were going to pull my hand on me. And I'm like, I'm going to pull my hand.
Beautiful. I love you, girl, but I love you. I love you. How beautiful.
I've woken up in time for sunset, coffee cup in hand. I'd let a stand of stars bid me good evening while the sands of day slip through my hands like destiny dreaming. My breathing shares the shallow song of sirens screaming down Western Avenue, northbound through Lincoln Square to Rogers Park, where careful, shell shocked, hat cocked, rock hungry, 20 somethings hide dope in gym socks, still wet from running, their faces shine like Nubian kings. But the persuasion of crime leaves the mind prey to invasions of another kind. I mean, it's hard to find that line between right and entrapment when success is a diamond necklace and a fat ride with a fly girl. But as a young guy whose soul lies in the third eye of this world, I believe there's a balance that we are not seeking. That we are not teaching our children to love and keep reaching for freedom from mindsets that bind them. I mean, the wind does not blow in a world of walls, and we all take the fall if just one of us slips. These lips can leap wisdom, but not while we're sipping our coffee, asleep to the song of the sirens we keep trying to hear. Kids keep dying for these answers. We keep lying to ourselves, saying it's fine, long as our stock markets are rising. And what cries out from race dies in the place of our culture, and I will not nurture this human nature. It all started 15,000 years ago. When Sumeria, alarmed by a drought, they farmed too much food, so they had to fan out. Until Egypt took slaves, because it can't pay the labor. Until Rome took the war like it was doing a favor. Until Europe took Africa more than it gave her. And we got America, no less the graver, but always the grave for our darker-skinned neighbors. And it's a flavor so bitter, we say, we'll just swallow it later. We will not nurture that human nature. And you know, just last February, we celebrated the life of a man who was known to understand racial crisis and demand that it come to a place of equality within his lifetime. And to white and to black, he was more than a king. I mean, his far-reaching speeches gave everyone a dream. But he was murdered by mutants, and the cream kept turning the coffee whiter somehow. And now we're complacent, with no leaders to guide us toward safety. I mean, even Jesse Jackson sounds racist to me lately. I mean, even sometimes I get scared when I'm walking back to my car after being the only white poet spitting words on a mic at an all-black bar. And those far-reaching speeches seem farther than ever when some clever media news corporation pleads racial impunity, even though on TV they're only reporting crime in the black communities. I mean, an employee of Enron can steal billions of dollars from people like us, but if a brother steals 20 bucks from someone on the bus, he could be beaten by cops and emotionally tortured in jail, and I can't bail us out of this injustice. I can't just wail some poem that's going to sail in the hearts of those hailed as our lawmakers. Mr. Kennedy, but I will not fail to tell you that as a white man in this city, I watch cabs drive past blacks on Michigan Avenue out of fear of criminal behavior, brought out by reports in the news that show African Americans as some dangerous component of our American culture, and I'm not going to nurture that human nature. So when I see artists on MTV, and I watch artists pimping women and HIV, and I watch artists trying to low-ride their SUVs with Uzis out the window and bling-bling in their luck, talking about violence like it's a knock-knock joke, or fashion like it's pop and lock, lock and load. Somebody croaks on the streets of Harlem, and then somebody else has a song about how they're the ones that did it, with a bottle of booze in one hand and a 45 in the other. Making mint of the misery of our brothers and sisters is hypocrisy, at least. But we all know that the heart of this beast isn't black, it's green. And when I lay in bed at night in Rogers Park, inside my heart, I still have a dream. And just so you know that I'm not some hip-hop kid who flips their lid over the last fat rhyme he did in some underground crib where I hid from the masses. When it comes to what passes between these two lips, my sincerity's as thick as molasses. I'm just a white guy who likes to write and lay in bed at night with my girlfriend on the north side and occasionally hear that gunshot out her window and wonder who found the other side of that stray bullet. And will they awake in time for sunset, coffee cup in hand? Or will they become a stand of stars that bids good evening to hearts like mine beating and history repeating itself, but never loud enough in a world of breathing do-nothings that stand on the corner dealing blood and high water?
Thank you.
going to read this one. I wrote this for another poet. It's a tribute to another poet. His name is Miles. He's in a group called Ear Candy. They've got a tremendous show as well at 3831 South Michigan Avenue. And it's been a good experience knowing him. I can see you changing a nation up there. As you grind words into wine and beats into water flowing, I can feel you changing a nation up there, and once I thought I was all-knowing. And once I thought it was a nation that wasn't mine. And once I thought I heard a black poet tell me that he hated whites that rhyme. And once I thought that there were two types of people. And once I thought that my lack of color left me blind and culprit. But then I remembered, my ancestors are new to this place too. Kept down my nationality instead of race, but somehow in the epitome of their community, they dropped their day goatees and granted stereotype immunity, unless you believe in the soprano. Luigi Daddario, my great-grandfather, left Italy to become a part of freedom in America, and his daughter was one of the first women in Rockford to go to community college. But I don't have a culture, because homogeny stole it from me in exchange for an end to starvation. But I can see you changing a nation up there, and it leaves my heart racing to join you in the honest space between phrases. You make the ghetto sun shine hottest on your face, thereby replacing with words the burden of millions of displaced slaves. And tracing the melodic line in a symphony of pain, I mean, you maintain hope like a gardener in the land of Cain. And I can hear a changing, a nation changing with each refrain. You remind me that the plain truth, like a lame tooth, hurts each time you bite down. And in our tainted youth, the same proof is found. The way the rain breaks through the earth to help the seed break through the ground. You are a dreadlock stopping the deadlock of innocence, wrapping a headlock around ignorance from your sweet stock experience and observance. And your voice is the earth's mantle churning. And your silence is the sound of a thousand candles burning. And I find myself learning when you're turning syllables into words, striations that make congregations of artists stand up and stare, and I can feel you changing a nation up there. And maybe as your white fam, I can't understand the trials and tribulations of the black man. But I can say that I did ran from the cops in eighth grade for curfew violation. And half-colored greens at the house of a meager lighting. And though my memories may seem forced and outdated, you embraced me with your world and I was sedated. And you slated me at slams that I thought were black-faded. And you shared all your tenure of a poet as a poet celebrated with my humble attempts at racial unity. And for that, I am elated. And for that, I stand here center stage like a polka dot sage activated. Dripping words off from a page that your love for me created. And as you've already stated, who say it to? It was your poetry that saved me. And I see you changing nations. And I hear you changing nations. And I want to join you changing nations until the nations that we've raided with our poetry are free from form and agony and see, as you have shown me, that we are born to be as complementary as the bright that sees today and the night that breathes tomorrow. I can see you changing nations, and people always follow words with action. Lifetimes, 34 parents, 1,186 years ago. She invented kissing. And now she's my girlfriend. And my heart does cartwheels when it's time for bed. My head spins like those prayer wheels I used to turn into bed. 17 lifetimes, 34 parents, and clockwork. Just waiting for someone to share that frayed edge, ancient yearning I had for love. There were teachers I reached out to who were unable to help me find the perfect tune of higher consciousness, obnoxious student I was. But may the blessings be on every spirit that guided me to her, because though I may not see clearly the meanings of most things, when I look at her, I see a lotus petal that contains all the metals and miseries of the planets colliding. And what resides in me drifts down like autumn from her perfect tree. The way summer and fall eventually find spring together, she is the weather in which all my life blooms, and I'm just a handful of sand that looms at the top of the hourglass, waiting to pass through those 17 lifetimes, 34 parents, 1,186 years of just learning how to walk.
You see, I've been a prisoner and a guard. I've been a killer and a victim. I've been the wishbone and the hands that snapped it. I've been the mocker and the one that laughed at. I've been the plant that healed and the snake that snapped at. I've been the sun-beaten worm in the crack of the pavement and the young child that came along to save it. I've been the beggar in need of food and the princess who finally gave it. I've been a saint and a bastard, a slave and a master, the brother of my daughter and the mother of my mother. But above all this, I have always been lover of her, none other but from her. I come into each body within her acknowledge that I have already begun to love her because I've been in training. And let me tell you, 17 lifetimes, 34 parents, 1,186 years, 432,809 days is a long way to run, and I'm still sprinting. Because the sun passes faster since I met her. I mean to tell you that faster peels in her presence. All that effervescent light that started the planet, the explosion that began it, happened as if yesterday. I'm telling you, it's so easy to wait when at the end of each dark tunnel is one unhesitating kiss. I never miss her. She is the needle that my heart is the compass for. And I become a conquistador of my own fears when I remember those 1,186 years that I was learning about patience. And I'll tell you, I learned that patience is not just waiting at a bus stop wondering when destiny's going to show up. Patience is not writing your dreams on some paper cup just so you can toss it up into the ocean. No. Patience is a place of unending expansion. A state where the soul is opening, dancing, and in constant unfolding. A place where the creases of the soul were never told to stay closed, and each moment, like gold, reflects the answers. A state where the cancers of doubt dissipate like light clouds, and your mind wraps around every angle of focus, and your heart celebrates the end of comatosis, and all things once frozen become fluid, so that rivers of action flow into and through me, and I become cliff standing up to the sea, and I become air and the creature that breathes. I become whatever it is that I need to be to find that puzzle inside of me that will know how to find her again. And then, let us be lovers and marry our fortunes together. Yeah. Because I've got some real estate here in this poetry that she's been showing me for 17 lifetimes. I've got some real estate where she and I can be in this poetry that she's been showing me for 17 lifetimes, 34 parents, 1,186 years ago when she invented kissing and we invented us. When she invented kissing and we invented poetry. Train. This is a true story. She was playing with her friends and playing with her mind. She was winding her hair and staring at the man across from her with all those styled sneers that says, I know you, I see right through you, and I know what you've been up to. She tangled her hands in one of her dark strands of hair and began to understand the brands that had landed her in lower class has-been handed to her by an ignorant man that judged her when she was 10 on the color of her skin. And now, here was this man with his cell phone in hand, talking to his boyfriend in more than dramatic tones, and all her distractions from feeling alone in this world were condensed into one careless moment where innocence met ignorance, and in a sense, all of us on that L train fell into a state of recompense for every senseless thought our white parents might have taught us about young, black women. And there I was, with not much to laugh at. You see, I take the train because I can't take the track. And I watched this young lady in the shadiest part of her eighth-grade nature as she attacked the nomenclature of homo sapien homosexual. And I was vexed from all the isms that had crept into her rhythms, and the prism of opinion, like the prison of judgment, doesn't let a rainbow shine. And the crime is that time has not healed this blindness. The crime is that I am just sitting in silence to witness the violence that tears at the conscience from every obnoxious comment that hits this young man like a tyrant. And I watched the fear grow like a moth over his glossed eyes as he'd hear her shout, queer, fat, drag queen, unclean, vendor of rotted fruits, I know what you've been up to. I said, I know what you've been up to. And she peered right through him. Into his blue eyes, she hollered above the flipped up collar of his navy peacoat as she presented the train with the world's next scapegoat. Until it couldn't float past him, the moment so loaded with hatred, his mind raced the gamut of racist statements he thought had belated his enlightened vocabulary. And he became a dictionary of rage and contempt that preempted love and left God exempt from a world that resented his sexual preference. And I sat there silent.
I referenced Muhammad, and I referenced Siddhartha, and I thought of that dust that makes all of us humans and all of us different. Then I thought about the history of women of color, and how some had known no other life than pain because they were not men and not white. And how our world had treated them so darkly that their skin practically had to glow like sunlight. And right when I thought I had found my compassion, the train could not restrain itself from taking action, and two men rose to defend the assaulted and sweeten the salty tongue of this young 14-year-old girl. But then she swung her umbrella into his crotch, and we watched two men get up in her face, and we watched two men talk of race and of sex, and just when the place had a trace of a riot, the whole train got quiet and came to a stop. And then he called the conductor. And then he called the cops. And there was this tension as still as the shell of an egg, and I wondered what words I could say just to crack it. But I take the train because I can't take the train. So I picked up the phone off my lap to call home to say I had been detained on the train for ignorance, and I'd explain later. Then the officer came with his nightstick and handcuffs and asked the gay man if it were enough to just kick her and her friends off the train or if it were best to have them arrested. And I know the word nigger is bigger than me, but I swear to you I could see it on his breath when he said, yes, arrest them all. And I heard three African Americans behind me start sighing as the young girl started crying, and I was just trying to find the stillness inside the illness that had overtaken all of us as they cuffed her and rushed her out the door. I wondered, could we have done something more? Look, I'm young, and I may be naive, but I believe that love is the answer. And I know we can live this. So do you think forgiveness could have afforded this youngster an opportunity to overcome her prejudice? I mean, do you think compassion can counter the actions of ignorance? Because I find us in gridlock every time we cling to our opinions and these minions of bias that try us and treat us like powerless creatures controlled by a judge. Begrudging us love when I know we can have it. But if I take the train because I can't take the traffic, I mean, if even I take the train because I can't take the traffic, then the crime is that time does not heal this blindness. The crime is that our hatred is not met with kindness. And if I take the train because I can't take the traffic, then the crime is that time has not healed our traffic. And if it can't heal that word, I mean, not even that word, then our lives are a clock that will always run backwards.
If you feel so moved. You don't have to move.
I've got a landline for my home phone, and a skyline for my cell phone, and a byline on my cell phone that reads, dream happy. And every time I snap my fingers, I miss an opportunity. And every time I flap my wings, I land in some new city. And every time I pity, something shitty happens to me. And every gritty, witty word that I have let pass through me has pursued me like those winged monkeys screaming as I run through Oz. Because I take responsibility for the fertility of my actions. I know that my agility has instilled in me compassion, for the folks whose flexibility always winds them up in traction. And I think that our hostility is inability for connection. Because I want us to be here now. And I want us to free our minds. I want us to see this blindness as a spiral down the staircase. Because if it can't be here, then where? If it can't be now, then when? If it can't be us right now, then who? I come before you so that you might run through me in action. And you'll see that my compassion and attraction go hand in hand. Because I've got this landline for my home phone, and a skyline for my cell phone, and a byline on my cell phone that reads dream happy. And you know what? I'm thinking of investing in a pager. Because I want to be engaged in every page of this ageless book. From every conversation waves from Tillamook to Tel Aviv. And if you believe that Adam and Eve could also be Adam and evolution, then you are part of a revolutionary divide that can trace their time back to God. Can I get an amen?
Amen!
And if you believe that time can save a world of people and the breathing a life where money is power is meant evolution, then you are part of a revolutionary divide that can trace their time back to God. Can I get an amen?
Amen!
And if you believe in joining me in rolling up their sleeves to spell out these disillusions of the world, then you are part of a revolutionary divide that can trace your time back to God. Can I get an amen?
Amen!
Thank you. But if you are a religious crusader,
Well, you're crucifying religion because you're allowing your fear to control you.
Well,
and if you are freedom fighters, you're fighting freedom because you're allowing fear to control you. But if you are a faith and the revolutionary race of mind can take their time back to God, then this clock is ready to be stopped, and the rape of this rock is ready to be stopped, and the numbing grace of shock is ready to be stopped, and the faith in stock is ready to be stopped, and the cock of the rifle is ready to be stopped. But I'm not asking for some army of moral cops or some flock of sheep to shepherd. I'm just calling all connectors, all conductors of productive life to structure and awareness uncorrupted by this rank of fear. To collapse the dark synapsing void and connect a heart of joy throughout your daily ritual. To abolish the abysmal broken threads of hate and propagate a revolutionary race of minds that can make their time back to God so that this clock is ready to start again, and this rock is ready to start again, and the faith in stock is too rotten to eat, and the cock of the rifle is stifled by our understanding. Then you won't need a landline for your home phone, or some skyline for your cell phone. Just a byline on your soul phone that reads, dream. She turned the volume up and turned slowly towards me and breathed that fire out when she said, I put a spell on you because you're mine. And my eyes dined on the finer lines of her face. And before I could trace the next moment in time, she closed her lips and placed one finger across the lonely union of a kiss. As my hands fell all over her hips and dripped across her stomach like an ice cube melting at the tip of a volcano. And I know that she's the one because I am done searching. And I've only just begun to explore the 66 and a half inches of her five-story body. And more than this, more than words can express, I love her the way the four seasons love Chicago best. The way a snowflake loves to rest on the tongue of a child. The way captivity loves those wild animals. She's like Hannibal, and I'm her next willing victim. Grinding like pistons, cracking like wishbones, hydrating each other with one another's sweat. While the frost melts in our February windows, you better stop the thing that you're doing. You better watch out, I ain't lying. Yeah, my mind has been flying in the skies of this canopy for so long, it's almost as if that song were written for me, like some sexy 70s prophecy, like some Chinese fortune cookie that reads, you are the star following her blinding light. And in one night that feels like an eternity, I catch a part of her glow and I let it burn in me until I see the energy between me and her igniting like a golden spark on a Hindenburg, like St. Elmo's fire breathing blue and green electricity. She gives me fever all over, and I relieve her with devotion as oceans of blood pump out of my body and ram it through my heart before she even touches me, and she just moves her lips half an inch from my neck and slowly up the side of my cheek. She keeps teasing me, releasing the hounds of love, and all the while the music sounds, I ain't gonna take none of your fooling around. Ain't gonna take none of y'all put me down. And she pushes me down on the ground with a hand on my chest. I put a spell on you. And even though I've never met her, I could set my watch to her every step. For every time she's crept into my mind and swept me clean of my desires, while I wept for more St. Elmo's fires from this lover sent, hell bent from a land where hell free is over and over and over and over. I'm a spell. She's my imaginary muse.
She's the lit fuse of this poetry bomb that ticks and talks and syncs with my circadian clock and watches the rhythms flow freeform out of my mouth until the only thing left standing around is her and myself knocked down on the ground from the force of my own words, just begging her for more sweat to wet my palate lest I should forget what love's supposed to taste like when it's wet. And you better bet I'm gonna lay there still and silent like an angel with my halo bent. I'm ashamed of that tent that props up in my pants when she lays her hands like a magic wand over my head filled with ideas gone wrong because always it's this song emanating from her. And sometimes, you know, the truth hurts so much you just want it to touch you again and again and again. When she puts one leg on either side of your hips, looks you straight in the lips and says, I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Thank you, Kevin.